Hey, you are listening to The Workplace Leader. This is the podcast where we go behind the scenes of corporate real estate, talking to industry experts about how they shape the next generation workplace.
I'm your host, Sabine M., and in today's episode, I'm speaking with Phil Simon. Phil is an author, workplace technology advisor, and podcast host. So hi, everyone. Today, I'm joined by Phil Simon. He's a fellow podcaster and an author of 11 books. I was quite impressed by that. The connecting point between the two of us is actually that we both had Darren Murph on the podcast. So we figured let's get together and talk about our common or different experiences talking to people in the workplace space. So Phil, let's start with that. What do you do and how did you get to doing that, actually? What's your background? How did you get to be an author of 11 books?
I'll give the brief version, Sabine, but thank you for having me on. It was never my goal to write books about technology and data and trends and business. If that were the case, I would have taken a different path. But to make a very long story short, I graduated college with essentially a degree in economics, didn't know what I wanted to do. Wound up going back to grad school to study industrial and labor relations at Cornell University, then worked in human resources for a hot minute, realized that was terrible for me because I had this technical background and had gone to Carnegie Mellon as an undergrad. I was pretty good at technology, data, systems, computers. So started helping companies implement human resource information systems. After about a decade of that and seeing most of these projects fail spectacularly, I just started writing and in 2009 published my first book, Why New Systems Fail. And then I kind of got the bug and would bang out basically a book a year. Took a little bit time off writing when I joined Arizona State University as a college professor in 2016. But while I was there, I quickly wrote a book about analytics for my analytics class and then Slack for Dummies and Zoom for Dummies. And then after I left ASU, I said, there's actually a lot more going on here than just a dummies guide. So I started working on my most recent book, Reimagining Collaboration, about the power of these collaboration tools to be so much more than email or Skype 2.0. And these days, if I'm not writing or speaking, I'm training or consulting, but it's usually based around the confluence of these other factors. I don't really focus on one thing. They're all kind of around business in some way.
Yeah. I'm sure we're going to dive deeper into that later. I want to come back to your podcast for a minute. It's called Conversations About Collaboration, and it's looking at how to adopt new tools and a new mindset in lieu of the new normal. Why did you start that?
I like hearing myself talk. No, the podcast is actually an outgrowth of the book. I was aware for a long time that podcasting was becoming a popular medium, especially as people were spending time at home, if they were going for walks or just wanted to zone out. But there was way too much good stuff on these tools, but also the future of work for me to cram into one book of any length. And even though I consider myself reasonably intelligent, there's so many other smart cookies out there. And even though the collaboration tools have certainly been a frequent topic on the show, there's no going back, right? I mean, the future of the office, Chris Good was talking about that, how you manage your remote workforce, that's been coming up quite a bit, how to be effective in virtual meetings. So I have done, I think it's up to 60 episodes by the time this airs. And I've really enjoyed learning from folks. And one of the reasons I think I've been able to be reasonably prolific as an author is that I'm a sponge. So I'm listening to podcasts, I'm reading articles and books, I'm going to conferences, I'm talking to people. And eventually this information gets in my head and I squeeze out a book pretty quickly. So it's also been a good networking opportunity. I knew of, for example, Darren Murph, when I wrote Reimagining Collaboration, I think people call him the Oracle of remote work. It's kind of hard not to know who he is. And the really interesting work that GitHub has done in building a sustainable distributed company. But yeah, there have been great ways for me to meet some other folks, even folks who've written for New York Times or Bloomberg, people have worked at Amazon. I mean, all companies are handling this in a different way. And I'm naturally curious.
I'd like to squeeze you a little going with the sponge language.
What
were some of the interesting or surprising findings you gathered through the podcast?
Oh, gosh, so many. Karen Reed has been a guest. She's written a couple of books, and I thought that my audio setup was pretty good. And she was critiquing me in a nice way about how certain things could be positioned better. Bill Carr from Amazon, when he sent me his book, was explaining how they did things there. And I was very aware of Amazon. I'd read both books by Brad Stone, who is also on my podcast, talking to these folks about how they're navigating on a personal level what's going on. Even just as a fellow writer, a lot of the guests have written books or they're on my podcast to plug their books. You know, I have one writing style. I'm not saying it's the best one. It's certainly not the only one. But talking to other folks about how they write and research is fascinating to me because, you know, they might approach something in a completely different way than I would. That doesn't mean that I'm right and they're wrong or I'm good or they're bad. So it's been really informative or instructive, I should say.
You've said it. Reimagining collaboration. I have not memorized the subtitle. You may be able to give that to us. I think the collaboration piece of the future of work and hybrid work is what many, many companies are wrapping their heads around currently, and especially hybrid. How do you make it work with people that are on-site and off-site? What are some of the things that we can start with when we reimagine collaboration? What are some of the things that sometimes tend to get forgotten maybe in that setup? Like you said, being critiqued for the setup that you've had at home as an example.
Yeah. Well, this book, Sabine, stems from the realization that when I was writing Zoom for Dummies, it actually had a lot in common with Slack, although most people and some Amazon reviewers have even said, how do you write a 400-page book about Zoom? Well, if you're only using the web app to do a video call, then yes, unless you picked a very big font, that would be a tough book to write for that length. But Zoom is so much more than just Skype 2.0. Slack and Microsoft Teams are so much more than just email 2.0. And I picked that subtitle, Slack, Microsoft Teams, Zoom in the post-COVID world of work, I should say that subtitle, for a number of reasons. The book has to get noticed, right? And it's a very busy world out there, a very crowded and noisy one. So just from a search engine optimization or SEO standpoint, I wanted people, when they were doing a search on Amazon or wherever they were getting books, to have my book show up. So the thought was, and my friend Lori, who's an organizational change consultant, convinced me, look, you know, let's just work under the assumption that your CXO uses Microsoft Teams or Slack or Zoom. But they say, we're really trying to replicate pre-COVID life in the post-COVID world. And you can say what you will about how we worked before in person, largely in a synchronous way. It wasn't ideal. People had long commutes. I don't know about where you live, but I believe the average American commute pre-COVID to work was 35 minutes. And if you think about it, that's over an hour per day, not to mention getting ready for work, doing your hair, which of course for me is a non-starter, but it would take time. And you know, doing a meeting on Zoom when you shouldn't have even been doing the meeting in person is questionable, much less when you've got issues with connectivity and being distracted because you've got cats or kids in the background. So to get back to your question, I think it would start with the realization that we should not just try to replicate previous technologies, business processes, and activities online. Yes, we can absolutely raise our hand in person, and in a Zoom webinar, you can raise your hand. There are ways to make it seem like the real world, but it really isn't just a crisis, as Churchill famously said, never waste a good one. It's an opportunity to do things so differently. Even if you just considered the power of these collaboration hubs like Slack, Zoom, Microsoft Teams, Google Workspace, and a bunch of others, they're amazingly powerful with respect to building an organization knowledge repository, this corpus of knowledge. Much less, and we could talk about this more, but being able to connect these different applications or what I'll call spokes into them. So you can create this gestalt, which is mind-blowing to me when I see organizations or people. It's almost like you use your car as a cup holder. Well, it can do that, right? To hold your coffee cup, but it can do a few other things. Or using your iPhone, maybe this is a better analogy, to make phone calls. Well, you can do that, but I'll guarantee you that most people don't just use their smartphone to make phone calls. So there's a lot of untapped and, quite frankly, amazing potential that organizations can unleash if they start to think of things differently. And as Toni Morrison famously said, if a book doesn't exist, then you have to be the one to write it.
That is very true. I'm just thinking about the raising your hand function. When I think about the on-site meetings, well, the many, many on-site meetings I had before remote was a thing, I don't think anyone ever raised their hand like in this way. It was just like either speaking over each other or you would wait until someone's like, does anyone have a comment or something? And then it's your turn to say. So in that sense, I actually think that the raise hand function has kind of improved giving a voice to people in some instances.
Yeah, I would agree there, because if the CEO is in a meeting and he or she occupies the room and presents himself or herself in a very powerful way, you may be less likely to speak up. You could also argue that if you are raising your hand or if you're putting something into Slack, of course, you can delete it if you wrote it. Or if you're an admin, you can delete someone else's if it's an inappropriate image or joke or whatever. But that creates something permanent. It's harder to say in a way, Sabine, well, 3 years ago, you raised your hand in a meeting and said this. Well, people may not even be in the company anymore. Versus if you, well, here's a screenshot, right? Same way if you sent an email 4 years ago. So yeah, I mean, as a general rule, we are trying to replicate a lot of these things. Another example would be Slack's huddles. Like pre-COVID, it wasn't uncommon for, let's say at the end of a meeting, people would huddle in the hallway and they'd say, hey, I had this idea about this, blah, blah, blah. Well, Slack, oh gosh, about 6-7 months ago, released a popular feature called huddles. And they're effectively these informal chats that can take place without video. Because if you think about a video call, I have to make sure that I'm all prim and proper, that we schedule a time, and there's usually an agenda, and it's all very formal. But huddles are informal. So in some ways, companies have been, I think, pretty responsive to users' needs, especially with, say, Zoom fatigue or management saying, look, we don't want to have a meeting on Wednesday forever, unless it's an urgent matter, right? And Zoom fatigue is a real thing. We've actually done, I think, fairly well navigating the chaos. And Stuart Butterfield, who's the CEO of Slack and now part of Salesforce, made this point in a podcast. I think it was Open Source Code or something like that, Source Code podcast. Imagine if we could not use technologies and the pandemic hit, right? We would have lasted a day or two, but we couldn't meet in person, or it was very difficult to meet in person, but we had these tools. All things considered, we have fared pretty well, at least in the United States. They say that productivity has increased, maybe because of less commute time, at least stayed the same. Now, there are other problems, but you could argue that there was never a better time for a pandemic because, you know, we've got broadband in many cases, not everywhere. A lot of us had computers. Yeah, we had to learn some new software, but Zoom exploded in large part because it was so easy to use. You didn't have to set up another account. And we could talk about that all day long. But, and this is exactly why I not only host a podcast, but also appear on podcasts. It's just my perspective. You have a different one living in a different part of the world, in a different industry, talking to different people. And I just enjoy having these discussions, whether it's on my pod or someone else's.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned Slack and the features available there, what I was just wondering is there kind of a new etiquette when it comes to using Slack and Zoom, or like best practices? One example that pops to my mind is like deleting messages. You just mentioned that as well. You can disable that in Slack, actually, so that you can't do it, or that you can't even edit things once you put it out. What's your view on that?
Yeah, this is one of the few areas in which I would disagree with our friend Darren Murph, because I know GitLab at the end of every month archives or deletes all the messages. Now, I'm not going to tell them as a publicly traded company that they're doing it wrong, but I would argue that even if it were a random comment from someone and you were to delete it, that comment may contain valuable information, or it may demonstrate a trend. You may see that certain people don't comment in channels very often, and those are people less likely to stay with the company. They don't feel engaged, right? Particularly if they're new employees who've never been to the proper office, never met their colleagues. So this is why we're learning how to do this. And again, I'm not saying that GitLab or Darren is wrong. He's a successful guy, and you know, so be it. I could just say that if it were my candy store, I would do it differently, because towards the end of Reimagining Collaboration, I put on my Swami hat and make predictions for the future of work. And it's a lot like if you've ever seen that Joaquin Phoenix movie, Her, about the guy who falls in love with the operating system.
I think so, yeah.
Okay. So for those people who haven't seen it, I won't ruin anything, but so I'm not an expert on artificial intelligence or machine learning, but I do know that all of those tools and technologies learn based on data. More data means, all things being equal, it's going to learn faster. So I envision a future in which these technology hubs will be incredibly intelligent. And as, again, Stuart Butterfield of Slack famously said when he was talking about the product, it will be the chief of staff, always on, that answers questions you didn't even think to ask, which blows my mind, right? It isn't something simply as, oh, it must be important because someone used the red exclamation mark in Outlook, right? Oh, it's urgent. Okay, well, not necessarily. It may be urgent because of other factors. And there's so much that these tools can possibly do, apart from the sexy AI stuff, but just in terms of saving the time that we waste. I was reading a study from Asana. I had a couple of people who work with them on my pod fairly recently. They put out last April an anatomy of work report. And from their findings, and it varied by country, but by their estimation, around 30% of the time in the United States, I think it was a little bit less in some of the other countries, the work that people actually did wasn't the good stuff. They called it working on work. In other words, they were trying to find a document. They were creating a duplicate document. They were scheduling meetings and going back and forth. And that stuff sucks, right? I would argue that that's a big reason that employees are burned out, right? At least for me, yes, after 10 or 12 hours, I'm pretty much done for the day. There's only so much that I could write or prepare for a talk or consult or train or whatever. It does take a lot out of you. But if you were working on a really cool project and you're going through the air and people were building something and you were having fun, would you be as burned out versus I spent 2 hours, I cannot find this thing, I thought that it was here, I'll create it from scratch and someone sends it to you, oh, here it is. That's maddening because all this information is there. So getting back to my example about deleting information, I wouldn't do that. There, Slack, Zoom, Microsoft Teams all have very powerful and improved search capabilities. It's a lot like Google. Early on, Google was really good. Over time, it's gotten better. And the more that these hubs learn from the people who use them and how they use them, the more powerful they'll be. So it's very much a network effect, not unlike Facebook. If you and I are the only people on Facebook, okay, we can connect with each other. But what if we connect with everyone in our countries? That's much more valuable. What if we can connect with everyone in the world? So I tend to look at these tools through a certain lens, and I don't think that people correctly understand what they can do if they're only willing to change, which of course many people aren't.
Yeah, that is very true. Speaking of things that are not changing that fast, makes me think of the office as the physical space where we still conduct work or are supposed to conduct work for many companies. And a lot of the discussions going around, okay, the office needs to change. It needs to reflect that probably we can do focus work well at home, if provided we don't have the cats and kids running around that you mentioned before. So then to the office, we would only come to like collaborate and mingle and these kind of things. But the question really is, what does the office then need to become that place where you can collaborate effectively?
First, let's start off with the notion that you won't necessarily have to go to the same place. Many companies are experimenting with co-working places, as you probably know. There may be a nominal office, but who knows how big that's going to be. You know, I completely agree with you. If COVID had lasted 2 weeks, it would have been a fun experiment, maybe a couple of months. I would argue that every day that we work productively and effectively from home makes it that much more harder to go back. Something like, and we're a very polarized society here in the United States. I think it's worse than it's ever been since the Civil War, 160 years ago. But something like 85% of Americans agree that they want the option to work remotely at least some of the time. That's a remarkable number. So if you buy that as a premise, then no one's going to want to go an hour or 30 minutes or even 10 minutes just for the managers to watch them work, right? We don't need butts in seats. So what do we need? I would argue we need flexible places. We need places in which people can collaborate, but you're going to need technology as a big part because if it's hybrid, in a way, if everyone's remote or if everyone's in person, that's actually easier, right? Hybrid is very difficult. Well, who gets to decide who comes in and when? And do we have enough spaces? And do we have the technology for it? And how come this manager makes you come in 2 days a week because I have to come in 3 days a week, right? People are going to notice that, right? These tools like Slack have made things more transparent. And many companies like Amazon have said, we're going to leave it up to the individual manager, right? Which makes sense because if you're doing customer service, you may be able to do that from home. But if you're getting together to brainstorm on something, maybe you want that physical presence. So to answer your question more, you're going to need more hardware, right? Things like Zoom Rooms or some of the hardware that Microsoft has introduced, right? Someone might need to beam in, but you don't want that person to feel like a lesser individual, right? We don't want a situation in which, you know, going back to the late 90s, if I were in the office and someone had a call in, that person was basically a black box coming from a voice coming from a black box, which was a phone, right? Yes, that person could make a point, but there's no way that that person could read the room, right? So it's going to be, I think, a smaller office, a more flexible office, and certainly a more tech-savvy office.
Yeah, which is an excellent prompt. You've noted as well, or I've noted from your bio as well, that you are a workplace technology guru, hyphen marks here. Yeah.
I've been called a lot worse as a consultant.
You've written books on that stuff, so you are. So
sure, we'll go with that.
But what are some of the common misperceptions when it comes to implementation of workplace technology?
Oh gosh, we could go on all day here. First of all, that you don't need training. It's silly to me. A story that I tell often is that maybe a year ago, a healthcare organization reached out to me to do some Zoom training. And over the course of 1 hour, they didn't want me to just cover Zoom in and of itself. That would be impossible. But also Microsoft Teams, OneDrive, and oh, by the way, how computers work. And I said, unless you want me to speak faster than anyone ever, there's no way that I can do this even in five times as long. So ultimately, the CEO said, all right, forget it. We'll just buy a few copies of Zoom for Dummies. And I think to myself, if you think that nurses coming off a 12-hour shift in the middle of a pandemic are going to kick back, take their shoes off, put their feet up and read my book, you are out of your mind. So let's start with the need for training. It needs to be your job over the course of a couple of days, however you break it up, to learn the new tool. I'd also argue that people think that the tools don't matter. Oh, this department uses this tool, this department uses that tool, they still use email. Well, I had this discussion with a CEO at a conference in Phoenix about 3 months ago, actually, pre-Omicron. And he was talking to me and I was telling him a little bit about my book. And he said, I'm curious, you know, what do you recommend for tools? I said, well, let me ask you this. What do you currently use for sending messages? And he said, oh, we use WhatsApp, we use Teams, we use Slack, we use email. I go, is it hard to find information? He said, absolutely. I go, maybe you should use fewer tools. I have a personal preference. I think that Slack is the best collaboration hub in the world, but I will use happily Microsoft Teams instead of email because Teams represents, to me, a better way of communicating. If you and I are on a project together, right, and you leave, imagine my having to then forward 20 emails to someone, right? That person's already overwhelmed. Imagine someone being able to then, and that's actually happened on a ghostwriting project that I did. Ultimately, it didn't work out, but because I used Slack, when I left the project, I turned over the administrative credentials, username, password. I said, whoever you get to replace me as the ghostwriter, that person now can see all of our history. And it's broken into channels or buckets so that person can absorb that information at his or her leisure and not have to wade through all these emails with attachments and things that are outdated. So you know, training's important, recognizing the power of tools, and also recognizing that it isn't an individual choice. This notion that I can use whatever tool I want. Well, collaboration and communication tools don't exist in a vacuum. You don't communicate or collaborate with yourself, right? So if an organization decides to use Zoom instead of WebEx or use Workplace by Facebook instead of Slack, you may not be happy about it, but that's the decision that the organization has made. And if you don't like it, you can leave. Many people are doing so. The book does touch upon those. Reimagining collaboration is much more of a conceptual piece than the Slack and Zoom guides were. Those are more tactical. Here's how you set up a Zoom meeting. Here's how you add a user in Slack. But hopefully this book, in 5 years, people will look back and go, hey, this prolific bald dude actually knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, I'm just thinking back to the first job I took on. The guy who did the job before me, so everything they did was communicated in emails. And he had printed emails and put them into the folders. And then behind him, there was like a wall of folders with like all the emails printed for all the customers he had. Like the stuff they'd agreed upon in negotiations that would be in these folders. It was impossible to find something. I'd spend hours sometimes to find that one email he's written where they agreed on something. And then sometimes it wasn't there. So it's like what you're saying about like putting that in a place where everybody can access it, it should be common sense.
Oh, 100%. And when you say everyone, I mean everyone who should be able to see it, not the whole world.
Of course.
People don't understand. I can make Slack channels or Microsoft Teams or Zoom channels, public or private. There are so many ways for me. I could turn a conversation you and I are having into a channel because we need to invite someone into it. Again, these are things that people don't understand because when COVID happened, you know, they still had to figure out what to do, or many people lost their jobs. Now that we know that this is going to be the new normal, and I don't mean to just plug myself for training or consulting, but you know, hopefully people will realize that this is an opportunity to do things better. People don't want, and I've said this many times, for their personal lives to keep revolving around their work lives. They want the opposite. And now we've got the tools to make it happen. And if you think about it, it's this major unlock. We're going to be able to live in a place that we actually enjoy. And if we have to drive into an office 2 hours once a week, so be it. Or if we have to fly once a quarter to company headquarters, that's okay. But think about all that we're getting back, right? Think about being able to go for a walk in the middle of the day, or take care of a loved one, or pick up your son from soccer practice. You know, people weren't able to do that. In fact, before the pandemic, according to Pew Research, something like 55% of workers were actively disengaged, which is an astonishing number. And for our being able to create a workplace with a digital headquarters at the root of it, I think is this amazing opportunity, right? So you join a company in marketing, you can see the conversations that have taken place. You can get to know the folks beyond a formal org chart. You say, oh yeah, I remember you. You're the one who always drops a lot of Breaking Bad references in your talks or in your comments, or you use this emoji or whatever. Give some people some personality. If you fuse that with in-person work, I really do think it's a successful formula. Although many companies are saying we're going to be remote permanently. I know Zoom just announced that they expect only about 4% of their employees in the future to always have to be in the office.
Wow, that's a really low number, 4%.
Well, if you think about it, they're trying to lead the way.
Of course. I mean, I'm surprised it is 4%. They could have said like remote, everyone as well. So it's like, it's a weirdly accurate low number. It's like, it's 4%. Right. It's not 10. It's not zero. It's four.
And who's to say that it winds up being that number? But look, Salesforce announced this over a year ago, that in their conception of the future, there would be those three buckets. Now, it's going to be very tough to prepare food or do physical security remotely, right? You need to be there. If you're going to be a nurse in case something, God forbid, happens to one of the employees. But there are going to be folks who don't need to come at all, and some folks who need to come infrequently. But again, regardless of where you're working and when you're working, I think the tools that we need to use are going to be essential for this to work. I'm very proud of the fact that Reimagining Collaboration is a holistic book. Again, drawing back to your first question about my background, and I used to joke about this when I was a professor in the Information Systems Department at Arizona State, I had the worst pedigree, right? You could not have picked someone, but I taught myself a lot of programming languages and applications and concepts over the years. So definitely self-taught. But because of my background, it isn't just about the best tools. If you've got a dysfunctional company culture, if you don't pay your employees a lot, you're not just going to stay because we use Slack, right?
Yeah.
But if you are happy at work and your manager treats you well, yes, if you get some dream job or your wife wants to go to Paris and you can work from there, then maybe you wind up leaving. But I don't think that people who have gotten used to a better set of tools want to regress, right? You've taken your friend's Lexus Tesla for a drive. You may not necessarily want to go back to your 45-year-old Pinto.
Yeah, maybe not. Now, what I'm thinking though is looking at working remotely, it's very easy, although the tools are available, to disconnect. You could just work away on your own stuff and not engage unless it is necessary. How can organizations make sure communication is still happening? Because you don't want to force people to be on all the social Zooms and stuff. That's probably also not helpful, but like, people disconnecting is something that could happen also.
Sure. Well, first I would argue, Sabine, and I'd love to get your thoughts, if you don't trust someone to work for you, then why are you hiring that person irrespective of location, right? It's not like people were always 100% productive in the office, and even forget, you know, going outside to check your messages on your smartphone. I mean, there are people playing solitaire. I remember in the early 90s when I worked at some places, people taking smoke breaks. So let's start with that. Second, tools like Slack offer analytics. In fact, you can link to this if you want when you release this, but I looked at Slack data when I was a college professor because I was curious about student participation and when that happened. And it turned out that some people were more chatty on Slack than others. So I exported the data to a CSV and I put it into Tableau and created an interactive visualization that I put on my website because I'm a geek. But I could see that certain students weren't as communicative. Now, were they using Slack to exchange messages about a group project? Maybe not. Maybe they were texting. Maybe they're using WhatsApp or Snap or a million other tools. But again, that was a window into folks. And I told the students at the time, you can use whatever you want to communicate, right? But I'm not joining your Facebook group. I'm not getting on WhatsApp with you, right? I will communicate with you through Slack, not through email, not through a learning management system like Canvas, but Slack. So I made it very clear. I think that organizations can do that. And if someone isn't communicating in Slack and they're only using email, that draws the attention away from folks. And if you make an exception for Harry, why aren't you making an exception for Sally, right? So you could argue that if they're not using the tools to communicate, they are swimming against the stream. In fact, I can remember when I lived in Las Vegas, I was having a discussion with a company that had implemented Slack. This was in early 2015. It had just gone live. And I was talking to the CEO of the company and said, yeah, we had to let somebody go because she would not communicate in Slack. She kept using email. We said, we don't use email for internal communication. And they thought it was important for everyone to do that. They gave her a couple of warnings. She ignored them. And they said, we're going to find someone else who basically plays by the rules. So hopefully that's a decent answer to your question. But I also would add that you should not confuse quantity for quality. And there are all sorts of human biases that I found fascinating. Things like proximity bias, right? We tend to think that someone's working hard if we can see them, right? Out of sight, out of mind. Or confirmation bias. I knew that you were a bad person because I remember when you did this, right? So those human biases are still very much around. Just because if someone posts in Slack, just like responding to an email, just because you responded first or a bunch of times doesn't mean that yours was a valuable answer or the best answer. Or just because you said the last word doesn't mean that, again, the same thing applies. So even though the analytics tools that Slack and Microsoft Teams and other offer, and they will get better, especially with some of the spokes that I talk about in the book, you still need to use your brain, right? One of my favorite laws is, have you ever heard of Goodhart's Law?
No.
So I became aware of this when I was a college professor. And in a nutshell, it states that people will modify their behaviors to how they're being evaluated. So the classic example is if you say we're a nail company, we make nails, as in hammer and nails. We reward the biggest nails possible. Well, a team will produce a nail that's the size of a house, which of course isn't practical. You say, all right, no, that's wrong. We're going to reward the quantity. So you're going to have people creating these little tiny nails smaller than thumbtacks that you can't use either. So again, human judgment is important. We can support our judgment with data. And that's always a good idea. One of my books is on analytics. But I don't think it's a matter of this person is better because she communicated five times as much in Slack as you did.
Now, I absolutely agree with what you've said, especially when it comes to productivity. Basically, productivity. I was more thinking of the well-being part of it, because I notice it actually for myself that when I get like tied up in work and things get stressful, then I don't take the coffee breaks with my colleagues anymore. I kind of like shut down and like live in my bubble here. I don't see anyone the whole day. And that kind of adds on to like the stress, because then I'm like feeling secluded and disconnected, as I said. So that was more what I was thinking about, like how can you use the tools mindfully as well for that kind of things.
All right. So one of the misconceptions about Slack and the other collaboration hubs is that notifications are a binary. And Cal Newport, who best-selling author, wrote Deep Work, college professor, tenured at Georgetown, really smart guy in promoting his new book, World Without Email, effectively equates email to Slack. And I wrote a fairly long post on my website called In Defense of Slack that effectively refutes that argument. It's understandable because of what I said before. A lot of times people don't have training, but this notion that I'm either going to get all the notifications or none. Well, there are so many different ways in both Slack and Teams and Zoom and these other hubs. And remember, they all steal from each other, that I could mute or silence notifications or only get notifications from different people or different times or different keywords. Again, there are a lot of different things that you can do. And if you are taking a break, except if you need to hear from your manager, then maybe you'll feel less stress. If you are going off the grid and then culturally that's okay at your organization, then you won't come back as a pariah the next day and you didn't check this thread going on, you didn't chime in. So the tools allow us to customize our notifications. That's great. But again, it isn't just about the tools, it's about the culture. I was reading about one company recently whose management said to an employee, make sure that you take time off because you had plans and Omicron canceled them, right? To me, that sounds like a company I'd want to work for, right? Because it's not just lip service, right? Anyone could say, oh, sure, you should take a break. But one of the benefits, for lack of a better term, of going to the office to work was that once you left, in theory, you were gone. Yes, people could send you messages, and many times they did, but mentally you had this separation. I actually wrote about this in my 2015 book, Message Not Received, on business communication. It's weird working from home because you're not always working, but you're always at work, right? So if there are no guardrails, right, if the culture is such that I can bug you at any time, then the tool doesn't matter. I was reading an article, and there's actually an example of this in my new book, or Slack for Dummies, or maybe both, I forget. But anyway, the over-the-counter luggage company, the name escapes me right now, the CEO was using Slack as a cudgel, right? So slamming employees in it, saying you need to be responding at any time of the day or the night. Now, you might think, well, wait, isn't Slack this tool that you're advocating? It absolutely is, but you can misuse any tool. So to me, you've got a cultural issue. And the CEO had stepped down, but then she came back. I forget her name. But to me, that's an example of how you should not use these tools. And even if you are using the tools that I recommend, you can misuse them. And nobody wants that.
Yeah. I think it's Portugal or Spain where they shut off emails after a certain hour. So companies are like, by law, not allowed to message their employees after a certain hour. I find that really interesting.
You know why they did that?
Why?
I've never been to Portugal. My Portuguese is not great. But from what I read on that particular law, Portugal is attempting to brand itself as employee friendly. So why not work there? And there are similar instances. I know about, this was even before COVID, Tulsa, Oklahoma was giving people $10,000 to move there because they wanted to be seen as this tech hub. So I can see how in this crisis, there are companies and teams and individuals and even countries that are trying to use this as an advantage, right? Imagine if you lived in Portugal and your manager wanted you to respond. Well, legally, you couldn't get that email. Now, there are other ways to contact someone. But again, the general point is that they want people to have some type of balance. And I know that Mexico City is another place that's experienced some migration. Again, getting back to this notion of COVID being this opportunity, if you are a country that wants to attract professional folks, why not pass laws like that, right? Why might not compel vaccinations? Because yes, you still have some folks that don't want to get them. But I think Mexico City is something like, it's in the high 90s, which is a lot higher than it is in some countries like the United States. So say what you will about what's going on with respect to work, it is going to be interesting. And we're still trying to write the playbook, right? I can't tell someone like Darren Murph that he's doing it wrong because his company's been very successful. I generally agree with what they're doing, but I would never delete all my Slack messages. But again, that's just me. So it is fascinating having these conversations, especially if you go in the mindset of, I believe in these general principles, but their principles are not necessarily absolutes.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's like really interesting time to experiment with these kind of models, like also countries doing with a 4-day week now, realizing that people are actually more productive. They can do the same work in less time, and then they benefit from that.
Yeah, I was just listening to an interview with Jason Fried of 37 Signals, and they've been a distributed company for over 20 years. And I write about them in a couple of my books, including the most recent one. And he said flat out, after 8 hours, you're not productive. So stop. He was a little bit more colorful with his words, but I think they've been on a 4-day work week for a long time. And again, I think this is an amazing opportunity. I mean, many times people have been afraid to go on vacation or take time off from work because they would come back to see an inbox with 2,000 messages, right? And that stress was, and it just keeps going and going. You're playing whack-a-mole. My favorite response to that is a Google engineer who set up his auto response as follows. This is brilliant. Hi, I'm on vacation. When I come back on this date, I'm deleting everything in my inbox. If your message is important, send it to me again after that time and I will read it. I love that.
It's true. That's very, very good. I will talk to my manager if I'm allowed to do that.
Yeah, well, let's have a discussion.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have to say I'm in the fortunate position that I don't get 2,000 emails. There is loads of Slack messages though. But then you can sort through, like, there's ways to prioritize the channels, right? So we do have like a random conversation channel. You don't necessarily have to read that, although that's the most fun channel than on the other hand.
Right. And that's the beauty of channels. And channels have been around for a long time. I mean, some people would say that Slack is just a more sophisticated version of internet relay chat from, I think, 1998. So that was a long time ago. But I completely agree with you, right? A random or a fun channel, you might just go in if you need to take a break. But if everything's in your inbox, then how do you process that? Is it by date? Is it by person? Is it by priority? Is it by subject? Well, if you use channels, then all that's for you. And again, getting back to this notion of artificial intelligence and machine learning, that's just the starting point. Imagine 2-3 years down the road in which even though something is in a channel that you normally don't check very frequently, Slack has determined that because of your role, because of your connections in the organization, because of what you do and the time, you need to know this now, right? That's not something that email can do, and I don't think ever will be able to do. So when people like Cal Newport, again, I disagree with him, although I respect his opinion, it's just not true. You can't equate the two. It's like saying, you know, my bicycle is like a Harley Davidson. Okay, they both have two wheels, but one can go 100 miles an hour, and I can't do that on my bike.
Yeah. Now, painting a picture of the future, I like to ask my guests if they could magically solve a future of work problem, what would it be?
I would force everyone to get off of email for internal communication. A lot of companies have, but people like what they know. I just think there's so many reasons. I thought that after I wrote my 2015 book, I would stop ranting about it, but that hasn't been the case. I think it's a horrible habit that we have, and there's so many restrictions to it. That's on the tech side. I'm hoping that working from home or in a hybrid way will make our lives fundamentally better. But there are still many old school managers who are insisting that everyone's there. I know the CEO of WeWork took some flack a couple of months ago because he said playtime's over. And I understand if you're doing business with a banker or you want it to appear professional, you're not going to go to someone's house and they're not really built for that. But it's so interesting to me what companies are doing. I spend a lot of time absorbing information. I'm hoping that people will invest in the training and the tools to do things better, because I would argue that everybody wins and you could save money on real estate costs. You could have employees more engaged. And when they do leave, you still have all of their knowledge in one place and we're less overwhelmed, we're less stressed. So I'm hoping that we come out of this with a new outlook on work and that our work lives revolve around our personal lives.
I would agree with that. We haven't thought that through completely. There's still things that we can change and use as a lever for, yeah, as you said before, like a better work-life integration or life-work integration, if you want to look at it vice versa. Now, I have a last small quest, which is, who else should I have on this podcast? And if you haven't asked them yet on your podcast, what should I ask them?
You may want to check out Larry English. He has run a consulting company remotely for the last 20 years. And his book, his company is called Centric Consulting. And off the time, I think his Office Not Required is his book. Don't quote me on that. But I had him on my pod. I read his book. I like what he has to say because he's not one of these academics or technology experts who speaks in a lot of jargon. He's just a guy who's been doing it for a long time in a very successful way. So Larry English, and a very nice guy, also here. I think he's in Ohio, so he's in the States, but I would recommend having him on because he's also very forthright about mistakes that he and his company have made along the way. His book is a kind of warts and all telling of how his company came to be successful, and it's not oversimplifying things. It's not, these are the four ways to do whatever. I tend to take those claims with a 50-pound bag of salt. It's just a very honest account from a very amicable guy.
Thank you very much, Phil. It's been fun to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Sabian. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of The Workplace Leader, there's more. Go visit our blog and have a look at some of the other topics we have covered. Or tune into our next episode of The Workplace Leader.